All right, this meeting, the House Labor and Commerce Committee, is called to order at 9:08 a.m. on Friday, March 4th, 2022. Members present are Representative Shragi Snyder, Co-Chair Fields, and myself. Rep. Sponholz, let the record reflect we have a quorum to conduct business. Thanks so much to our Secretary, Leah Frazier, and our LIO moderator, Lydia Klein, for joining us today. A reminder to members, announce yourself before speaking. For those that are listening online, and it's a great time to silence your cell phones if you have not already done so. So we have three items on our agenda today. A fourth hearing for and final committee action on House Bill 58 relating to insurance and Medicaid coverage for contraceptives and related services. A first hearing and invited testimony on HB 372 eliminating a minimum wage exemption and consideration of seven of the governor's appointees. We have a very busy schedule today. As we always do in labor and commerce. It is the committee's intention on House Bill 58 to rescind action on House Bill 58 to take up and pass out a committee substitute that has a correct date for conditional effect, changing the date on page 7, line 18, from January 1st, 2022 to January 1st, 2023. This was an oversight, and we want to make sure that we correct that before we move it out of committee and it moves to the floor. Are there any questions from the committee on the changes that are being made? All right. Seeing none.
I move to rescind the motion to move House Bill 58 out of committee.
Is there any objection? All right. So our action on House Bill 58 is rescinded. Now can I have a motion to take up the CS for House Bill 58 before the committee?
I move the committee adopt the CS for House Bill 58, version G as the working document.
Is there any objection? All right, seeing none, the CS for House Bill 58, version G is open for discussion. Are there any comments on House, the latest CS? All right, seeing none, is there a motion to move House Bill 58, version G from committee?
I move the CS for House Bill 58, version G from committee.
Is there any objection? All right, seeing none, House Bill 58, version G, moves from committee with no objection. I want to authorize Ledge Legal to make any conforming changes that might be necessary for the bill. All right, next up, we're going to House Bill 372. I'm going to take a brief Eddie's. All right. The House Labor and Committee, Labor and Commerce Committee is back on the order now. I apparently need some more coffee this morning. Next up, we're going to go to House Bill 372, eliminating the minimum wage exemption. We are going to hear a presentation on the bill from Representative Chris Tuck's staff, Michael Mason, and then we'll hear some invited testimony from representatives from the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. We also today have available for questions Tanya Keith, Program Manager for the Wage and Hour Section at the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, in the event there are any technical questions that folks need to have answered. With that, we'll go to Mr. Mason for an introduction of the bill.
Good morning. My name is Mike Mason. I am staff to Representative Chris Tuck, and he apologizes for not being available this morning. You have a very full agenda, so I will try to be brief. House Bill 372 and the Senate Companion Bill, which is SB 185, clean up an unneeded section of state law that has not been used since 2018. Back in 2018, the state of Alaska repealed the regulations that allowed employers to hire a worker with a physical or mental disability and pay them a sub-minimum wage. Despite the repeal of the regulation, the section of state law authorizing the payment of the sub-minimum wage remains on the books. House Bill 372 seeks to change that. Right now, there's nothing in place to stop future regulations that would allow a sub-minimum wage for workers with disabilities. House Bill 372 removes all reference to those with earning capacity that is impaired by physical or mental deficiency or injury. As a result of this action, it would no longer be legal in Alaska to pay a disabled person a wage below the minimum wage. To date, Alaska, Hawaii, California, Colorado, Oregon, Texas, Washington, and several other states have eliminated these sub-minimum wages for people with disabilities. And currently, legislation is pending in Georgia, North Carolina, Missouri, New Mexico, New York, South Carolina, and Virginia to eliminate or modify the payment of sub-minimum wages to disabled persons. This bill is important because paying a sub-minimum wage to those with physical or mental disabilities is a discriminatory policy. Disabled persons should be able to earn what they are worth, with the minimum wage as the floor for compensation rather than the ceiling. And disabled persons in Alaska should never be paid less than workers based on their perceived capabilities rather than demonstrated abilities. Every day in Alaska, persons with disabilities prove those assumptions wrong. I wanted to read you a quote that this is from Tom Ridge, the chairman of the National Organization on Disability. He is quoted as saying, "There is no excuse for treating an entire class of American workers differently from others based solely on the characteristics of disability, yet that is exactly what current law allows." It's important to note that any proposal to exempt minimum wage must be approved by the Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development, and House Bill 372 adds an additional minimum wage exemption to state law for anyone under 18 years of age that is temporarily employed by a qualified nonprofit organization. And House Bill 372 leaves in place the current exemptions for student learners and apprentices. The Alaska minimum wage is currently set at $10.34 an hour, and the federal minimum wage is at $7.25 an hour. And the federal minimum wage has not been changed since 2008, when it was $6.55 an hour. That's my brief introduction. We have invited testimony today from Miranda Walso. She's the acting executive director of the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. This bill is a priority of that organization. Also, chair of the Governor's Council, Heidi Lee Williams, is available, and also Rick Nelson. He's the chair of the Self-Advocacy and Leadership Committee with the Council on Disabilities and Special Education. And I would be happy to take any questions if you have them.
All right. Are there any questions for Mr. Mason? I actually have one question, Mr. Mason, and that is why it is that you the bill as currently drafted allows for a minimum wage exemption for people that are under age 18 if they're employed by a nonprofit.
So if you go to the statute, which is section 2310070, subsection 1, as it currently reads, an individual whose earning capacity is impaired by physical or mental deficiency, age, or injury at the wages and subject to the restrictions and for the period of time that is fixed by the commissioner. The way the bill was drafted was to remove the language dealing with disability, but they wanted to leave in the exemption based on age. So that is where the language that is being inserted was put in there. And I should note that this was the spearhead for this is Senator Michicki on the Senate side. And we basically took their version of the bill and introduced it in the House side. And that was the way the bill was initially drafted by Senator Michicki's office.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Snyder.
Thank you, Chair Sponholz. On following that thread, I had the privilege of hearing this bill in a previous committee, and that was the very question that I asked. And we may want to continue down this road, if not now, as we consider the bill. The answer that we received in the previous committee had to do with this would be appropriate in certain training settings, was my understanding leaving that committee. And I would just like to confirm that that's actually the case, or it could be the case, but not in all instances.
Yeah, it was to give the commissioner the flexibility for those training opportunities for people that are 18 or younger.
And this would have follow up. And this would have to happen, just to emphasize, this isn't an automatic ability to pay under minimum wage for those under 18 at nonprofits. It would have to be an exemption applied for and approved by the commissioner.
Yeah, it's important to note that any proposal to exempt minimum wage must be approved by the commissioner of the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development. And you'll hear in testimony that the minimum wage exemption for disabled persons had not been used for several years prior to 2018.
All right. And we have a question, for Tanya Keith, Program Manager of the Wage and Hour Section of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Ms. Keith, can you describe the context in which an exemption for paying minimum wage for people under 18 working for nonprofits would be appropriate, and how the department currently approaches this and would intend to approach it moving forward?
Yes, thank you. This is Tanya Keith, Program Manager for Wage and Hour. Currently, there is, he had said previously, the regulation that addresses how that specific exemption would be approved has been removed. So there currently isn't an exact process for that that one would have to be developed, but there would be definitely strict guidelines about it. And it does say temporarily employed, so there would be a set period that they would be allowed to work.
All right, Representative Snyder and then Representative Fields.
This conversation is just jogged my memory with respect to hearing about some issues at Eagle Crest, for example, which I understand operates as a nonprofit. I'm happy to be corrected if that's not true. And that I had heard some conversation that there were individuals there being paid less than minimum wage. And I'm curious if you have insights into that and if it has any relationship to the exemptions allowed in the current version of statute and how this version might change things.
Yes, thank you for that question. So currently there is a statute in that exempts individuals 18 years and older from the Wage and Hour Act entirely. And that would probably be the exemption that they would be using now.
Quick follow-up.
If
you could clarify that for me, if there's a different exemption for those 18 and older, is that what you're saying?
Yes, in Alaska Statute 2310.05.
Thank you. I'll follow up on that. Thank you.
All right, and I want to just reference for the record that Representative Kaufman joined us at 9:15 a.m., so he's been here for a couple of minutes. All right. Representative Fields.
Through the chair, Ms. Keith. So if I understood your question or your answer to Representative Sponholz's question, the ability to pay sub-minimum wage for minors is sort of an anachronism, and it's not being used right now. And if you were going to use it, you would have to promulgate new regs to provide guidance on how to use it. Did I understand that correctly?
Correct, yes. Under that current statute, there is nobody, and there's no mechanism to ask for the exemption in that.
Okay, so thank you. And then if that's the case, then we could, in fact, eliminate this exemption and have no impact on any actual people, but just provide statutory clarity around something that already exists. So, yeah, maybe I'm inclined to think we should do that, which is actually the same situation with this bill, because back under a previous labor commissioner, the department eliminated the regulations allowing subminimum wage payment to people with disabilities. So now all we're doing is cleaning up the statute to align with that. So it actually seems like the exact same scenario.
Yeah, I would agree. All right. Mr. Mason, is there anything you wanted to add before we move to invited testimony?
In your bill packet is a memo that we prepared for the House Judiciary Committee that goes into the Alaska Wage and Hour Act. Mm-hmm. And this is in regards to Representative Snyder's question. And it includes the exemptions that were listed under AS 2310050. And that's been provided to the committee, and I can provide that again.
All right. No, thank you. I see here that's dated February 23rd. So available in the bill packet. All right. Thank you very much. And with that, we're going to go to our invited testimony today. We're going to start with Miranda Walso, Acting Executive Director of the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. Ms. Walso, welcome.
Thank you, members of the House Labor and Commerce Committee. For the record, my name is Miranda Walso, and I'm the Acting Executive Director for the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. As the State DD Council, we work with the community and other state agencies to ensure that people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and their families receive the services and supports that they need, as well as participating in the planning and design of those services. I'm joined today by several GCDSC Council members and self-advocates. But one of our members, Corey Gilmore, who chairs the Committee for Community Inclusion Supports and Services, was unable to attend as we hoped. He's asking to share with you that the reason he was unable to attend this hearing was due to the restrictions placed on him in his current assisted living facility relating to staff schedules, which govern when he's able to get out of bed in the morning and to provide transportation that he depends on for basic care. He asked me to remind you that challenges like this are an incredible barrier and that there are many aspects of our society, including participation in the public process, which do not reflect the reality that individuals like Corey face every day, but that he believes passionately in this bill and wishes he were able to join us today and share his testimony with you himself. His comments are included in the written testimony, which was submitted to the committee, however. Since the federal minimum wage was established in 1938, a special reduced compensation rate was allowed for those with disabilities, known as the subminimum wage, which allows employers holding a 14C certificate from the United States Department of Labor to pay those with disabilities less than the federal or state minimum wage, using worker productivity rates as the sole factor for evaluating the performance of those with disabilities. This is a discriminatory method to determine compensation only for those with disabilities and requires that they measure up to a standard their non-disabled coworkers and peers are not evaluated on nor held to. Would you condone this being an acceptable standard to assess an individual solely because of their race? What if all individuals over the age of 65 had to prove they deserve to earn minimum wage at their job, but younger individuals did not? These scenarios are just as archaic as this provision in Alaska law, which holds to the notion that an individual with a disability does not have the same standing in the job market as their non-disabled peers, regardless of the quality of their work, their talents, gifts, abilities, or skills. This is a position at odds with the federal, state, and local policies that have developed over decades. In particular, at the federal level, we see the new understanding reflected in the Americans with Disabilities Act, the Individuals with Disability Education Act, and the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, to name a few. In Alaska, the Employment First Act also requires vocational services be provided to help people with disabilities become gainfully employed at or above the minimum wage. Further, in 2018, as mentioned, the regulations enacting subminimum wages for those with disabilities was repealed, but the issue remains unsettled. We strongly support the repeal of the statutory provision allowing any such regulation to be reintroduced in the future. It's not acceptable for public policies to remain in effect, which conflict with the basic premise that all those with disabilities are valuable members of society and have the same rights as everyone else to fully participate in all aspects of day-to-day life, including pursuing gainful employment and economic self-sufficiency. We ask the legislature and members of this committee to move forward with repealing this provision and ensuring the laws of Alaska reflect our values. Thank you for this opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you very much for your testimony today, Ms. Wall. So, Heidi Lee-Williams, would you like to introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony?
Hello, my name is Heidi Lee-Williams, and I am the Chair of Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. Thank you for allowing me to testify today as also a national speaker advocate who also experiences multiple disabilities and someone who has broke barriers, represents the NACDD, and as of Saturday, the Women's Federation for World Peace USA Her Story Award recipient. I would like to submit the following statement from my heart. We all have gifts and talents to offer, and our work is just as valuable as what others bring to the table. We should be paid fairly for our time and knowledge. It is demeaning that someone could just look at a person and judge them on the basis of their disability and offer them less than what they are worth. As Alaskans, we are better than that, and this repeal will help us acknowledge the DD Vision Law becoming reality. How can you be an adult and say that you can judge others based on your automatic perception of what someone can't do rather than teach them how, just like you would train someone else, and have them demonstrate their capabilities to soar to new heights? People often define themselves to have purpose in life by doing work that serves others in the community, by what they are contributing as their daily job. That matters to pay them accordingly for doing things that make a difference to other Alaskans. On behalf of Corey Gilmore, Chair of Committee on Community Inclusion Supports and Services, I would like to submit the following statement. In 2018, we advocated for the DD Shared Vision, which put Alaskans receive services in charge of their own care. And this bill is the next step and realizing the vision for all of Alaska. Not only does the vision give us the right to direct our own care, but the repeal of the subminimum wage further solidifies that we are competent Alaskans with something to offer our state. Again, thank you for this opportunity, as I know you'll all agree to do what's right today for a better future in Alaska. We all have a lot to offer each other, and what our gifts are valuable. We are all here to make a huge difference in all of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that testimony, Ms. Lee-Williams, and congratulations on your award. And thank you also for your service to the state through chairing the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. And next up is our final invited testifier, Rick Nelson, who is chair of the Self-Advocacy and Leadership Committee. Mr. Nelson, go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, I'm Rick Nelson.
Hi, I'm Rick Nelson.
I am the
So I am the chair of the Self-Advocacy and Leadership Committee for the Governor's Council on Special Disabilities and Special Education. And I have written a statement in which I will have my assistant read for me. So, Rick Nelson, Chair of the Self-Advocacy and Leadership Committee. This bill is so important because all people, no matter their disability, should get paid at least minimum wage to do the same job as their able-bodied peers. Having a law that singles someone out as not deserving the same pay solely because their disability is dehumanizing. As a person with a disability who has worked hard to have a successful career and earned a master's degree, I find that this statute reinforces the misconception that individuals with disabilities are somehow a liability for an employer. Keeping this statute sends the message that Alaska is the land of opportunity only if you are not disabled. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony today, Mr. Nelson. What is your master's degree in?
Public administration.
Excellent. Mine is as well. All right. Thank you very much for your testimony today, and thanks so much for your service to Alaskans through the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education and chairing the Self-Advocacy and Leadership Committee. We really appreciate it. It's also always great to see members of the Governor's Council and you when you come down to visit us. I'm glad you were able to join us remotely today. It's certainly more efficient sometimes to testify via Teams. Are there any questions for any of the invited testifiers before we move on today? All right, seeing none, thank you very much for your time and your testimony today. We're going to go ahead and set this bill aside for the day. Amendments on House Bill 372 are due by Tuesday, March 8th at 3 p.m. And next up, we are going to go to confirmations, to appointees, to boards. We are going to hear from about seven appointees today. Excuse me, a little klutzy this morning. I still haven't had that second cup of coffee, apparently. All right. First up, we're going to hear from Mike Dennis, appointee to the Workers' Compensation Board. Next, we're going to hear from Tristan Monterostelli, appointee to the Board of Marital and Family Therapy. Next, after that, we'll hear from Brent Cole, appointee to the State Board of Registration for Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors. And I'm just announcing these in order so everybody knows where they're going to be in the running order. Next, then we'll go to Elizabeth Stewart, appointee to the State Board of Public Accountancy, and then we'll hear from Bruce Schulte, appointee to the Marijuana Control Board, and then Ashley Schaber, appointee to the Board of Pharmacy, and then finally we will hear from Sharon Woodward, appointee to the Board of Social Work Examiners. So in that order, we're going to hear from our appointees, governor's appointees to board. So first up, we're going to go to Mike Dennis, appointee for the Alaska Workers' Compensation Board. Mr. Dennis, go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and describe your qualifications for an interest in this board.
My name is Mike Dennis. I'm an owner of Conrad House and Insurance. This is my second term on the Workers' Compensation Board, and I've been in the insurance industry for about 31 years.
All right. Are there any questions for Mr. Dennis? Mr. Dennis, what do you think? I understand that workers' compensation rates have been going down recently. Do you want to give us an update on what the Workers' Compensation Board has been working on over the last couple of years and where you see it going?
We're specifically, work on the, rules and regulations of workers' comp and how it affects employees and employers. But we also, have hearings on injured workers to see if we can resolve conflicts and situations with workers' compensation and payment and things like that. I feel like with my experience, I have the unique skills to give some insight because I work with both employers, employees, and the carriers and adjusters. So I have a unique skill set that can bring some insight into how all those work together to make sure that, Alaska workers get their fair compensation and coverage.
All right. Do you have a question?
I do.
Representative Fields.
Thanks. Following up on Representative Sponholz's question, the decline in workers' compensation rates seems to closely mirror and be driven by the decline in on-the-job accidents. What kind of potential do you see to continue improving workplace safety and ideally drive those rates further down or at least keep them low? Thank you.
Well, I think You know, and this is my own theory, having been in the business for a while, I think that part of why the rates are able to, you know, go down and will continue to be down is that because of the advent of social media and cameras everywhere, it's much easier to combat fraudulent claims. Along with that, I think that, you know, most employers with the, you know, computers and things like this as well are able to, you know, do work-safe placing meetings, work-safe meetings and things like that that would, you know, help workers to know how to be safe and continue to be going forward. So I think that, you know, there's just a lot of things that we've learned, you know, over the last 20 years that have been added to employers along with employees, the knowledge and skill sets that would keep, you know, most places safe.
Okay, thank you.
Is there any follow-up? All right. Thank you very much for your testimony today and your time and also for your service to the people of Alaska. All right, next up we're going to hear from Tristan Montarastelli, appointee to the Board of Marital and Family Therapy.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning to the committee. My name is Tristan Montarastelli, and I am up for consideration for reappointment to the Board of Marital and Family Therapy. The initial appointment began in June of 2021, and I am very new to serving as a public board member, but I am excited and hope to be able to continue to serve. As for my qualifications, I have my master's in state and local public policy with an emphasis in economics from Pepperdine University. I am also an alumna of the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
All right. Thank you very much. Are you still working for the Office of Children's Services?
Yes, I am. I'm a full-time professional with the Office of Children's Services.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for your service to our state through that work. It's really important work and really difficult. Sounds like you might have a little unpaid aide there in the room with you. All right. Are there any questions for Ms. Montarastelli? All right. Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony today and also for your service to Alaska, both as a professional and as a volunteer on the Board of Marital and Family Therapy. Did we get Mr. Cole on? All right, we've got Mr. Cole on. Next up, we're going to go to Brent Cole, appointee to the State Board of Registration for Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors. Mr. Cole, introduce yourself for the record. Describe your qualifications and interest in serving on this board.
Yes, Madam Chairman. Thank you very much. I apologize. I guess I'm a little bit late, but I was a little unclear on the message. But my name is Brent Cole. I have lived in Alaska since my parents brought me up in September of 1959. I grew up in Fairbanks, where I graduated from high school, worked in the laborers union to put myself through college. I went back east and returned, worked a year construction again, always with the laborers union as a way, like I said, to put myself through college and law school. Attended McGeorge Law School in California and then was honored to receive a clerkship with Seaborn J. Buckaloo, who was a mentor of mine. I then worked for 5 years with the district attorney's office as part of my public service, I believe. I tried all types of cases, including at the end, the state of Alaska versus Joseph Hazelwood, which took about a year of my life. Then went on into private practice for a couple of years. I started in 1994 with my partner, Aaron Marston. He and I worked together for 18 years before he became a Superior Court judge. I have primarily been on my own as a small practice attorney in Anchorage. Now going on, I believe, a little bit more than 35 years as a practicing attorney in Anchorage. My practice, as you can imagine, I'm a small business owner, so I kind of do what I need to do to keep the doors open and the lights on. But I represent a lot of commercial fishermen, guides, outfitters, lodge owners, pilots, 135 operators. I'm an outdoor activities type of person. I have done some construction litigation. I have an interest in this primarily because I'm, as I said, I've been practicing for 35 years. I'm looking for some transition. I'm trying to give back to the community. I think it's important. I have three children that have returned to Alaska after going to college and some graduate school. I want to see Alaska have a viable and exciting future. So this is a little bit of my way of giving back. I have an interest just because I think architects, engineers, land surveyors, they build Alaska. And I always think it's exciting to be a part of that. So that should give you a fairly quick summary of my background and my interests.
All right. Thanks very much for that detailed introduction of yourself and your interest in serving on the board of architects, engineers, and land surveyors. So you were just appointed, so you probably have not actually attended a meeting. Have you attended a meeting yet?
I was appointed. There was a meeting. I wasn't, because I didn't have it scheduled, I was only able to listen to the second day, a part of the second day. I had other obligations, but moving, I have an idea of what's going on, and moving forward, I can schedule around it.
All right. Thank you. Are there any questions for our testifier today? All right. Looks like we don't have any questions for you. Mr. Cole, thanks so much for your service to Alaska and your time today. Next up, we're going to go to Elizabeth Stewart, who is an appointee to the Alaska State Board of Public Accountancy. Ms. Stewart, introduce yourself for the record and describe your qualifications for an interest in serving on this board.
Thank you, and good morning. My name is Beth Stewart. I'm a new appointee for public accountancy on the Board of Public Accountancy. I grew up in Alaska and graduated from University of Alaska Anchorage. Right after graduation, I joined KPMG, which is one of the largest public accounting firms in the state of Alaska. I received my CPA license in 1996 and have practiced as a CPA since that time. I'm currently the managing partner of KPMG's Alaska operations and lead a team of about 60 people, most of whom are either on the path of being receiving their CPA license or transferring to CPA. My interest in the board is the integrity of a public accountant license is critical to my business and I think to businesses around the state. And so protecting that integrity is something that's important to me.
All right. Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Stewart? It's always good to hear from hear that we had a local person who attended our local university. I certainly know that we have a member of this committee that is an alum as well of the accounting, I believe, of the business program, business at the university, and is also an accountant. So I think you're in good company. And I see that you continue to give back to the university by serving on the College of Business and Public Policy Advisory Board.
That's right.
All right. So what do you think are going to be the sort of the big issues for accountancy moving forward in the next couple of years in the licensing board?
Well, certainly reciprocity amongst various states is important, particularly with
the ability to work remotely now more than ever. Being able to serve as a public accountant across the borders is important. There's also challenges associated with changes in the skill set that are necessary in a public accounting profession. Use of technology to be able to manage data is important, and being sure that the licensing, the education and the licensing standards and requirements keep up with the changes in technology and changes in the times that we're living in, I think are important.
Yeah, all right. Are there any questions from other members of the committee for Ms. Stewart? All right. Seeing none, thanks so much for your time today and also for your service to Alaska through the State Board of Public Accountancy. We appreciate it. All right. Next up, we're going to go to Bruce Schulte, appointee to the Marijuana Control Board. Mr. Schulte, would you like to introduce yourself for the record and describe your qualifications for and interest in serving on this board?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, and for the members of the committee. My name is Bruce Schulte, and I've been appointed to the public seat on the Marijuana Control Board. I initially got involved with this industry as an advocate for ballot measure 2, the measure to legalize cannabis in the state, back in 2014. My punishment for that was to be later appointed to the Marijuana Control Board during the development of the initial regulations. I served on there for about a year, most of that as chair. I was reappointed by the governor to this public seat. And a bit, well, like I said, I've been very involved with the early regulations, with changes to those regulations, and I'm really just trying to help this industry succeed and look out for the best interests of the public. I'm not a licensee myself. I don't plan to be. Although I have an interest in seeing the industry and these, licensees, businesses, and so forth succeed. I think that's kind of it in a nutshell.
All right. Are there any questions for Mr. Schulte? All right.
Yeah.
All right. There are no questions for you, Mr. Schulte, today. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your time.
All right. Next up, we're going to go to Ashley Schaber, appointee to the Board of Pharmacy. Ms. Schaber, go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and describe your qualifications for and interest on serving on this board.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ashley Saver, and I am here for a new appointment seat for the Board of Pharmacy. The seat was effective July 1st, 2021. I am licensed as an Alaska pharmacist, and I've lived and worked here in Alaska for over 14 years. Prior to moving here, I lived and went to school in Georgia. My background includes community pharmacy, postgraduate pharmacy residency and leadership training, and work within the Alaska Tribal Health System. For the last 10 years, I've practiced in medication safety, pharmacy quality improvement, and management. Additionally, I've been active in leadership roles in the Alaska Pharmacists Association since 2014. Throughout my career, I've sought training to improve my skills in the care that I provide. This includes obtaining a master's in business administration, board certification in pharmacotherapy, and quality improvement training. My family and I are active Anchorage community members. My husband and I have two young boys, and we enjoy hiking, skiing, swimming, and team sports, mainly hockey and baseball. We both serve on the Polar Little League Baseball Board of Directors. I oversee clinical and operational pharmacy services at the largest hospital in the Alaska Tribal Health System. Example achievements of our team in the last few years include a full remodel and expansion of the pharmacy, initiation and expansion of an after-hours service for 5 sites within Alaska to increase access to care. 4 of those sites were critical access hospitals. And participation in hospitals' COVID response, including facilitation of the use of multiple new medications and supporting the expansion of hospital bed capacity, as well as implementing a technician apprenticeship program, which was a partnership with the Alaska Primary Care Association, the Department of Labor, and the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. During my service with the Alaska Pharmacists Association, we fostered key partnerships to improve care access and support healthcare initiatives in Alaska. Some of these include serving as a liaison to the Board of Pharmacy and presenting regular updates during their meetings, providing feedback on pharmacy regulation changes, and presenting key statute change recommendations and collaborating with the Board of Pharmacy for Health Bill 145. Additionally, the Alaska Pharmacists Association was involved in the Alaska Healthcare Transformation Project and provided feedback on the Alaska State Health Improvement Plan, or Healthy Alaska in 2030. My unique background of tribal health system pharmacy, public health, safety, leadership, and community involvement, combined with my motivation, makes me an excellent candidate for a Board of Pharmacy position. Overall, I'm looking for ways to use my background and my leadership to improve public health, safety, and welfare for all of Alaskans through the effective control and regulation of the practice of pharmacy. I believe I would be an asset to and work well in the Board of Pharmacy, not only due to my experience, but also because of my strong work ethic, organization, and communication skills. And I appreciate your time and consideration today. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony today, Dr. Schaber. Representative Fields.
Thanks to the chair. Just wanted to say thanks, Ms. Schaber, for your work on that pharmacy tech apprenticeship. I think it's one of the most exciting new workforce development programs in the state.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. We were pretty excited as well and have several apprentices currently in the program.
All right. There's a few people that have questions for you. Next, we're going to go to Representative McCarty and then Snyder.
Thank you. Through the chair, thank you for being willing to be a candidate. First question I have is, what's the percentage that you see is demanded of pharmacists regarding diversion of medications in an illicit manner, in that as the pharmacist's demand, as well as collaboration with providers that are writing scripts?
So to clarify through the chair, Representative McCarty, you're asking for the percentage of pharmacists related to diversion?
No. I'm asking what's the percentage of demand on pharmacists regarding awareness and verifying, making sure diversion is not happening or limited, and the collaboration of that with providers that are writing scripts?
Fairly high percentage. In my experience, my work, we work collaboratively with providers and healthcare team members to prevent and identify diversion. I know that the PDMC is an important tool that community pharmacists have here in Alaska to help for awareness of opioid use. And I know for diversion, the Board of Pharmacy does play an important role in reviewing diversion-related cases and what's being reported to the DEA as well.
Do you have a follow-up?
I do have a follow-up. And with the PDMP, what is your history with the other providers or providers maybe using or not using the PDMP, and it's falling on the pharmacist to do so with scripts?
Through the chair, Representative McCarty, my personal experience, I work in the inpatient setting, so I'm not personally using the PDMP on a daily basis, but I do know that it's a collaboration, a partnership with the pharmacists and the providers, as well as the Board of Pharmacy, to ensure that the program is being used appropriately.
Do you have a follow-up?
And one more follow-up, mm-hmm. please. And so I'm just kind of curious, what is your experience or what you're hearing experience with the PDMP and veterinarians in regards to opioid, you know, scripts and concerns of diversion?
Yes, sir. Through the chair, Representative McCarty, I know that the Board of Pharmacy has provided feedback regarding the veterinarian's use of the PDMP. I know it's a fairly complex issue,
not just related to one discipline, but the PDMP overall. You know, I know that there are ways that the PDMP can be improved on an overall basis to help improve it for use for all providers.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Snyder.
Thank you, Chair Sponholz. Representative McCarty stole my thunder on the PDMP, so thank you for asking those questions. At this point, would just like to thank Ashley for her work in this area, and if there was anything else in terms of policy or regulations under the purview of the Board of Pharmacy that she would look forward to addressing. I know you named a couple in your introduction, but just curious if there's anything else that you would add or areas of particular interest.
Yes, ma'am, through the chair, Representative Snyder, I know that the Board of Pharmacy in general is looking at several areas that are of interest to me and I believe interest to Alaskans in terms of healthcare access. I know the Board of Pharmacy is looking at ways to allow pharmacists and technicians to work at the top of their scope as well as receive payment related to the services that they provide. I know that the Board of Pharmacy is also looking in general at streamlining and simplifying regulations that are already in place, and that's something that I look forward to participating in as well. I know the Board of Pharmacy is looking to partner with the Alaska Pharmacists Association in support of working conditions to help ensure that our pharmacists and our pharmacy technicians have safe and healthy working environments so that they can continue to provide the high quality care that they do for Alaskans. And also, one more thought on that. I know that it's an important, just in general, for the Board of Pharmacy to continue to support our generations to speak to, or our new generations of pharmacists and technicians, to speak to Representative Field's comment through apprenticeships and supporting the School of Pharmacy that's a partnership with the University of Alaska and Idaho State Pharmacy, or Idaho State University.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Shaver.
Yeah. So, Dr. Shaver, I have a question for you about the PDMP. We're going to have a hearing on this at a later date, but I think, you know, one of the things that we're trying to figure out right now are what are the ways that we can make the PDMP more effective so that we're continuing to address the opioid epidemic, but make it easier for end users while achieving the public health goal of, you know, addressing the opioid epidemic. And I'm wondering, you know, if you have any recommendations on that front.
Yes, ma'am, through the chair, Representative Snyder.
No, that's Representative Sponholz. I am the chair, ma'am.
I'm sorry. My apologies, Representative.
No problem.
I think that's an important question, and I think that's important to all the users of the PDMP and also for all of Alaskans to ensure that the intent of the PDMP and the intent of the legislator in supporting the PDMP is actually meeting that intent. I think that partnerships with the board for the users of the PDMP is important. Taking into consideration their feedback from the end users is important. So I just think collaboration would be a good way to help improve that moving forward.
All right, thank you. And we look forward to hearing from, you know, the Board of Pharmacy at a future hearing on the issue of the PDMP, as well as from the Professional Association. We want to make sure that we understand that. One of the other questions that this committee is going to be having a hearing on soon is also on licensing, and I'm wondering, is the Board of Pharmacy running into any barriers to timely licensing processing in terms of resources, technology, unnecessary regulation that you could commend to us?
Yes, ma'am, Representative Sponholz. I do know that in general, the licensing aspect of the Board of Pharmacy, I know the turnaround time is definitely something that the Board of Pharmacy is looking at ways to streamline that process so that we can continually provide a quicker turnaround time for our licensees in order to meet the needs of Alaskans.
All right. We will also want to hear from the Board of Pharmacy and the Professional Association about that issue moving forward. Are there any additional questions for Dr. Shaber before we thank her for her time today? All right. Seeing none, thanks so much. You're certainly one of the most qualified applicants, I think, for a board that we've ever seen, and we're excited, I think, to advance your name. All right. Next up, we're going to go to Sharon Woodward, who's an appointee to the Board of Social Work Examiners. Ms. Woodward.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sharon Woodward. I am being considered for the reappointment to the Board of Social Work for the bachelor's seat. I have been in Alaska since 2013, moving from Reno, Nevada, where I graduated in 2007. I am currently Director of Social Services at Wildfire Court. We are a skilled and long-term care nursing facility here in Juneau. The primary population that I've worked with throughout my career has been with the elderly. My interest in serving on the board is, you know, just to help other social workers, you know, through my experience and opinions, help them, you know, to develop, you know, what they need to become good social workers. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for your testimony and your continued service to the state of Alaska through your reappointment as on the Board of Social Work. Are there any questions for Ms. Woodward? Ms. Woodward, I have a question for you. In terms of licensing, one of the pieces of feedback that we've heard about the Board of Social Work is that that social workers who are trying to get licensed or have their licenses renewed in a timely manner are having difficulty, you know, getting response from the staff to the Board of Social Work. Is there any work that's being done by the board to address, you know, the licensing processing times that you can report out on today?
Yes, ma'am. So because of COVID for the last 2 years, obviously, it was really difficult. You know, having in-person meetings and then, you know, working with the Zoom setups and everything. I think it has become much better. I am seeing less and less people that I have to do approvals for, so which tells me that we are getting them done quicker and in a timely manner.
So you're seeing fewer needs for approvals. Is that also possible that there's a delay in applications getting through to the board?
No, I really don't think so. It seems that, you know, because we see the dates when they've been submitted and everything, and it seems like they are being done, you know, in a timely manner.
And so how long is it?
Within 2 months.
Within 2 months. Okay, thank you. All right, Representative McCarty has a question.
Thank you. Through the chair, kind of following that train of thought, does the board, can it make decisions on candidates outside of the board meetings, if you're just waiting for information from the other states, reciprocity and stuff, or are you only voting on candidates' licensing in board meetings?
Through the chair, no, Representative McCarty, we are every month, every 2 weeks, we get a list of new social workers who are applying, and we do those outside of our normal quarterly meetings.
Excellent to hear.
All right. Are there any additional questions for Ms. Woodward? All right. Seeing none, thanks so much for your interest in continuing to serve on the board. Thanks to all of our appointees for nominees joining us today. I'm going to take a brief at ease for a second here. All right. My apologies. Now I've got my notes here. I'm going to go ahead and open up public testimony on these appointees. There is nobody in the room that would like to testify. Is there anybody online that would like to testify on appointees? Looks like we don't have anybody interested in providing public testimony on these appointees, so I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony. That wraps up our business for this morning. Thanks so much for joining us today. Our next meeting is scheduled for Monday, March 7th at 3:15 here in Barnes, room 124. We're going to be hearing about workforce development in rural Alaska. Thanks again to our Secretary Leah Fraser and our LIO moderator, Lydia Klein. This House and Labor and Commerce Committee meeting is adjourned at 10:08 a.m. Thanks.